I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt.
I sure am Scott Johnson. I mean, I sure am Tom Merritt, comma, Scott Johnson.
Now I'm confused. I don't know what's happening.
Proper punctuation is important even in spoken language.
This is true. Hey, do you know
The managing editor of techtv.com always said, oh no, you can say whatever you want. There's totally different standards for spoken language.
Really? Yeah. Is that true? All right.
Well, I think he just didn't want the extra work.
I'm going to quit peeing so hard on myself then. Hey, I'm going to see you in about a week and a day. Or no, 6 days. No, wait. Hold, sorry. A week and 6 days. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I should start playing some Blizzard games again.
Well, there'll be plenty there, so I wouldn't worry too much about it. We're here. We're doing it. It's a Current Geek episode, and we brought a couple of nerds with us. Very happy to have back on the show. Let's start with Daryl Skeels. He's on the line. Hello, Daryl.
Hello.
Hello. Daryl is, to many people, the Trek nerd on the Morning Stream podcast, but also the co-host of This Week in Trek and Grumpy Cast, and does a lot of cool stuff, like builds phasers that are super rad, and he's a giant Trek nerd, but maybe quite close to as giant as his co-host on This Week in Trek, who is also with us, Michael Gaines. Welcome back to the show.
I just took a shower, so if you time-lapse the show, you can watch my hair dry.
Great!
This is Daryl Skeel's third appearance on Connected.
Oh, yeah, we have a list now, don't we? We have this running spreadsheet of...
I don't know. Is it your second or third, Daryl?
It's... Well, if you count the original several centuries ago, it's the third.
Yeah, okay. Technically it's your third, and I think he may have counted those. I'm not 100% sure on that, but... right now, Ibbot's in the lead with 8 or something.
Wow. So Michael's been on before, right?
Yeah.
I was on, I think, 4 casts before, and I was on, what was the show with Eric? It's like the app.
Oh, App Slappy, yeah.
App Slappy, yes.
Yeah, that one. I remember that.
Second appearance.
All right, well, I like this running counter. It's time for us to kick it off. Let's do it. Here's the top of the show news.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
Are you worried about that getting dated?
No.
I mean, you know, Hoover's still relevant today.
Yeah, but it was literally that sound file was dated the second I captured it.
Hey, another Jay Martin is one of the fine folks who submitted stories at our subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. More people voting this week. Very excited to see that. Keep it up, folks. It really does help us. I mean, we, unlike Daily Tech News Show, where I like play dictator and I only include you as some kind of input, Current Geek is entirely determined by you.
Yep.
All right. Well, 98%.
Sure.
98%.
But a high percentage of what we talk about comes from your great ideas. So thank you.
So another Jay Martin sent us the sad news, actually, that Discovery's Mythbusters series will end after this upcoming season. That's 14 total seasons. So not a bad run. 248 episodes, 2,950 experiments. Stars Adam Savage and Jamie Hyman have been prepping what they call an explosive final season, which is... that they'll keep exploding things like they always have, as well as one final Mythbusters live tour as well.
Oh, good, because that actually was pretty successful for them. What's been interesting for me is these articles cropping up with interviews from both Heinemann and Savage talking about their time together, about the run of the show, what it means to be ending it, and so on. And the really interesting bit is they do not get along, like hardly at all. They never see each other outside of the show. They've never had dinner together.
They've never had dinner together?
According to an interview with Heinemann and confirmed by Savage, they do not like one another at all, but they respect each other for what they can do and how they do it. And, you know, as from a sort of professional effect slash science guys.
That's kind of cool that they're both okay saying that.
Well, I see now, Tom, I think there's a lesson in it, because if you can have these two guys put on what is, you know, considered one of the best shows that in a lighthearted way gave us a lot of science without even us knowing it in some cases. It was very entertaining. You always learn something, and you came away a little smarter than you were before. They were able to pull that off for 14 straight seasons and do it with style, and at the same time maintain the respect for each other that was needed to get through it and do it, but in reality did not like each other at all, but knew what they had to do to get the job done. There's something in there for us to learn from that's good, meaning, you know, you don't have to all like each other to get along. Like, people don't know this, but Tom and I fight constantly when we're not doing the show. I'm just kidding.
I thought you were going to out Patrick Beja.
No. No, that's actually fortunately or unfortunately, I get along with everybody I do stuff with. But it is interesting to hear that they don't like each other. And Jamie was the most vocal. Yeah, they're total pros. And they pulled it off. And that's 14 long years working with somebody you don't really like.
Curtis B says, I don't know if I believe that. Someone should myth bust it.
Yeah, they should do. Actually, the two articles I read was one on Polygon had an interview with, I want to say, Heinemann, or maybe it was, I can't remember which one they talked to. But Adam confirmed and Jamie talked about it. And Jamie's just excited to sort of move away from this and not do this sort of thing anymore. And Adam's probably going to do more camera things, behind the camera stuff or in front of the camera stuff. And it's just interesting to hear them talk that way, knowing that they did such a successful run in 14 years and it had never blown up on them or fallen apart. Just something to be learned. I don't know. Mike, what do you think? Is this you in 10 years when Trek, this week in Trek finally falls apart and you guys are like, all right, that's it. We didn't like each other the whole time.
I already ended Warcast, but that's one thing. Yeah. No, Daryl and I, we fight all the time, constantly. No, we don't.
I don't think I believe that.
No,
what about who the best captain is? Or? Yeah.
Picard and Kirk, that whole fight.
I can see there are people that I've worked with in the past who just irk the hell out of me, but you just got to do what you got to do. Mm-hmm. But that was a real paying job. I think that if in this doing podcast, well, not maybe not for Scott and Tom because this is your living, so to speak. But you know, in a hobby situation, you can just say that's it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. You can walk away from things.
Sure.
But if you really like the people that you work with, I think it comes off on the show.
Daryl, you going to miss MythBusters and miss the constant attention to, you know, busting myths? You're a guy that doesn't, you know, like hyperbole and fake stuff. You like to have the truth out there. So it's probably a bit of a loss for you.
Yeah, I love everything they do. It's great, great stuff. Everybody loves to see stuff blow up and all the different ways you never imagined it could be possible.
That's true. Chat room, I just put in there a link to the article I'm referring to. It's a very interesting read. I recommend it.
They will be miffed.
Yeah, and it isn't...
Oh, you did not do that.
Can we even go on after that? That was really good.
That's it.
Wow. All right.
Well, you may have heard, if you haven't, Disney has released what they're calling a final trailer for a little film upcoming called Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Wow.
EFC 88 let us know about that. There are plenty of breakdowns out there. If watching the trailer isn't enough for you, there's a supercut that provides a perspective on all of the footage that has been released, which is fantastic. There's lots of ways that you can find articles at IO9 and The Verge where they break down every single frame and talk about everything to try to find meaning in the brief glimpse of certain characters. Major takeaways. What's going on with Luke? Is he there? He's not in the poster. Why is Leia so sad? Is that a furry thing that Rey is crying over? And why isn't it December 18th already?
All these are good questions. And my favorite part of all of this is the Luke bit. And the reason it's my favorite part is because J.J. Abrams, known for kind of messing with us and speaking to Star Trek, telling us that Khan is not in the second movie, and yet there he was. That was just a bald-faced lie. It wasn't even like a really good trick or anything. So having Luke not be in anything, but knowing he's in the film, he was certainly part of the production. I you know, speculations everywhere, but and we have a story coming up that may help with some of this. But give us your theories. Mike, what do you think's going on with no Luke Skywalker?
So I have a theory about the plot of the movie in general, and I'm not going to say what it is because if I do and I'm right, then I basically spoiled it for everybody.
No, that is not a spoiler.
Yeah,
it is not a spoiler if you don't know. It's a theory.
Yes.
But I have a feeling from there. I have been like really, really wrong in the past with trailers, and I would make stuff up in my head. But this one, I think, is going to be a 3-movie trilogy about something. I'm not going to say it. So anyway,
can we have a ruling here? I respect the fact that there are the Jeff Cannatas of the world who don't want to even see trailers, and that's fine. Yeah. And those people should stop listening to discussions like this. But
you want my theory?
Yeah, but I think we should be allowed, barring having actual inside knowledge of the script or being on the set and seeing it shot.
to speculate. That is not a spoiler.
I agree.
All right. Here's my theory. My theory, and this is based on the poster that just came out. So the New Order, the Empire formerly known as the Empire.
Yeah. First Order. Although they did. The First Order also was a great band in the 80s.
They were great. Yeah.
There's that picture in the upper right-hand corner of the poster, which has a planet is now a weapon.
Yeah, well,
so we think.
It just looks like, it looks like, you know, it's Death Star 3.0 to a lot of people. But yeah.
So if you look in the trailer, there are two shots where you can see a trench in the planet. It looks like it's opening up.
Mm.
So my theory
is it's Pac-Man. Is
they're not looking. They're not
it's pixels crossover.
We see that Luke and R2 are together.
Yeah.
In the trailer, that one quick shot.
I think it's Luke,
my
right.
theory Almost. Is that how do you blow up a planet in the Star Wars universe?
The only way we've seen is Death Star.
The rebels have to build a Death Star to blow up the space, the planet. And who has the plans of the Death Star?
Luke and those guys.
R2.
Oh, R2 has them, right.
There you go.
Instantly copyable media.
Okay, that's interesting. That's very interesting. Now, I'm going to rule. I'm not the judge here, but I'm going to rule in favor of Tom's a definition of what is not a spoiler. And I saw what I think you just said is not a spoiler, even if it comes true. Mm-hmm. It is only a spoiler if we know it and then say it. And even then, I'd argue that we should be able to talk about it. However, I'm going to I'd throw you some fake space points for coming up with a pretty interesting theory there. Mm-hmm. I've yet to hear that. Nobody's mentioned that. Everyone just assumes New Order. First Order has.
Everyone assumes bizarre love triangle. Ray and Finn, Poe.
They all assume that that's bad guys. That's ex-Empire reviving the weapon system. And I really like what you just told me. I hope
because I've
been
looking at that thinking it's Starkiller Base.
Yeah, that's a Starkiller base. So that's what I think it is. Those shots in the quote-unquote ice planet that we see, that's the base. So what I think is that they need to... There's a shot in the latest trailer where they're like, there's a forest blowing up. I think that what happens is the Starkiller blows up a sun, makes it supernova, and that blows up an entire star system as opposed to an entire planet because, you know, why not wipe out everything, all or nothing? So I think that R2 is going to be... Well, maybe important to this. There are some theories that Luke is still hanging out on Forest Moon of Endor. I don't know.
He just liked it. Well, he settled down.
There's the scene where the hand reaches up and touches R2. We think it's him because in the narration it says, "I have it right when it's happening," right. And that's Luke's voice.
And he has we know he has a robotic hand.
Yeah, he's got the prosthetic hand, and he touches the droid. And what's in front of them appears to be something burning heavily, and then there's like forestry behind him. So I wouldn't be shocked if the theory about Endor might be right. Here's the trick though with this trailer, They don't really tell us anything. Like they tell us a million things without really telling us anything. And so my wife and Kanata and everybody else who avoids trailers like the plague, I don't feel like they really gave anything away. At all.
But I mean, just to argue the other side of what I was just yelling about, the giveaway that Han and Chewie are together in the giveaway, the Millennium Falcon's in the movie. I mean, you know, there's little things like that.
Things you all assume though, right? Coming to this. I mean, nobody, I don't even think Jeff, who hasn't watched any of these trailers, is going to come to this, not at least knowing he knows the cast is in it. Mm-hmm. He knows enough, unless he's gone complete blackout and avoided one of his best friends, Anthony Carboni, every day.
Right.
Who works for Star Wars on various projects, including the presentation of all the toys that one night. Like, if he is avoiding all of it to that degree, then maybe. But I think he knows Harrison Ford is in this. I think he's heard that Carrie Fisher's back. Like, if he's avoiding it in that to that degree, I'd be shocked.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like we got. We just got told the stuff we sort of knew. And now the only thing I really know now is it's going to look amazing and that they've got the tone right, at least visually. And they make me excited about ideas like spelunking in an old battle destroyer or
Star Destroyer.
And having that just down in the dirt and be old and decrepit from 30 years of you know being left there. is really neat. So they're already playing with
Daryl's
ideas.
Being awfully silent. Have you read the script, Daryl?
No, I'm just taking all this in. Yeah.
All right.
Give us your theories. What do you lay it on us, Daryl? You always have good ideas. What do you think they're doing here? Do you think we've got any? Did we get anything given away by the trailer, or are we just going to have to wait until the 19th, 18th?
No, I don't think anything's given away. Nothing of the story is given away unless you're super observant like Mike. Mm-hmm. And I think Luke is not in the trailers because they're saving that and sort of holding it back. So when you find out he is the Obi-Wan of today, you'll be shocked.
Or he's gone bad, or he's, well, I don't want to give away our next story. Tom, I was about to spoil our next story.
Well, I mean, gone bad is one of the theories out there, mm-hmm, right? Is that Luke has turned evil. Some people are even saying it's a con-like ripoff that JJ's performing by saying that Adam Driver plays Kylo Ren, that no, it's Luke behind that mask. Mm. You may have heard that Disney released, Strike It Rich One knows one person with a theory about Luke Skywalker, and his name's Mark Hamill. Mm. Back, I think in 2005, if I'm right, an episode of Dinner for Five, hosted by Kevin Smith, had Mark Hamill as a guest. This is the Jon Favreau show, by the way, where you'd get guests from Hollywood to sit around a table and chat while they had dinner.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith was filling in, and Mark Hamill was a guest and talked about Star Wars. Specifically, he talked in front of a nodding J.J. Abrams, who was also a guest, about how Mark Hamill had pitched George Lucas the idea that Luke Skywalker would turn to the dark side.
Yep, I even have a clip. And here's the thing. Abrams was there for, like, you know, if you're not that you're promoting anything. Stan Lee was there, by the way, as well, which is interesting. But they were JJ was there during the beginnings of Lost and was there to, you know, sort of rep for that. And there's Mark Hamill across the thing. These guys have no idea that one day he will be helming a Star Wars reboot. Oh, it's crazy to me. It's crazy it even happened. But here's what Mark Hamill said about what he wanted to see happen to his character and what George Lucas told him.
No, as an actor, that would be more fun to play. I just thought that's the way it was going. From when we finished 2, I figured that's what will be the pivotal moment. I'll have to come back, but it'll be like I'll have Han Solo in my crosshairs and I'll be about to kill him or about to kill the princess or about to kill somebody that we care about. And, you know, it'll be, it's an old cornball movie. Like World War II movies and stuff. And I was the one that said to George, you know, because I live in Japan, I said, I should come back having been trained somewhere with shaved widow's peak and a top knot, and like a braid. He said, no, I want your hair to look exactly like it did in the other two.
All right. So bottom line is, or my favorite thing about the video is J.J. Abrams is in the corner of the table. Almost looks like he's falling asleep. Like
taking it in, nodding.
It looked like he was sleeping to me.
It did not look like he was sleeping. I don't know where you're getting that.
He looks
he's
tired. Sitting,
paying attention. That's what paying attention looks like.
Well, so the theory...
His eyes are closed.
The theory is because Mark Hamill was pitching this idea of an evil Luke Skywalker that JJ soaked it in and never forgot and now is putting it to work.
Hey, yeah. Hey, Mark. Remember when we had dinner with Kevin Smith? Remember your idea? What if we did that?
Yeah.
What do you think? I don't know if that's how JJ.
I don't think that's how he talks.
That's
hilarious. But that's really interesting to think about, given that that was the year we got the third prequel, right? 2005 was the last time we got a new Star Wars movie. And that was probably part of it. I really wanted to hear what Stan Lee had to say about it, but I missed that part. So I don't know if he had anything to throw in there other than
all he said in that episode to anybody was like, you did that? That was really good.
You silly person. Excelsior, he says.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, yay or nay around the table. Do we think that, let's just make a prediction. Do we think Luke Skywalker is gone to the dark side somehow? So some theories are like he's having Pon Farr, like the freaking Vulcan. It's like Vulcan. It's the equivalent of Vulcan old people disease or whatever, where Spock's dad goes nuts and loses it.
That's not Pon Farr.
No,
Pon Farr is an entirely different disease.
Wait,
Daryl.
Pon Farr. Isn't Pon Farr the one where it's the puberty one for the Pon Farr, right?
Yes.
Okay. So whichever it is, they both have these two emotional outbreaks, and I'm just saying maybe when you get the Force that thick.
No, like, I know what you're talking about. It's the one where Spock's dad goes senile.
Yeah, it was a good, and everyone on the ship kind of loses their mind because of it. Like his brain waves mess up everybody. But Daryl, thoughts on that theory?
That's a stupid theory. It's not going to be that.
Damn it!
I kind of liked it too, Scott. I'm
I think
sorry.
It's all right. I mean, it does borrow heavily from Star Trek, so maybe they couldn't get away with it. But it's an interesting idea.
Oh,
you know?
The Anakin.
Like the
oh, Luke, you're Luke.
The force is so strong, he just can't deal, you know? Like it's overwhelming him. He's stuck on a planet to stay away from everybody because if he even thinks about the plant in the corner of the dental office, it'll lift up in the air and kill the receptionist or something. That sound right, Mike? Come on now.
The story can go in a bunch of different ways. I read a theory that Ward, what did he say? I think Mark said that war changes people. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he went bad, he went evil. I think that his redemption at the end of Return of the Jedi was enough for him to like not go fully dark or anything. But I think that we are not going to see the happy-go-lucky Luke that we did before.
Yeah, I think
we're going to see a war-torn Luke Skywalker or something. He's going to have things to say, and I think he's going to be a really big gray Jedi.
Well, here's the only other thing I'd say about it, then we can move on. We did learn that we no longer have the galaxy's great space atheist anymore. Han Solo is all in. It's all true. It's all real. Jedis and Sith. He knows it's all good. The magic, the little Yodas. He's not saying it's a bunch of magic and hoo-ha anymore. Space atheist, rest in peace.
Space atheist. Makes it sound like a great space coaster.
A little bit.
That's awesome. Yeah. Last theory.
Yeah.
I think Rey is Han's daughter.
Yeah.
Probably Leia's. Gotta be Leia's.
Yeah.
And then Finn is Luke's son.
Really?
Yep.
But we don't know who the lady friend would be, do
exactly.
We? Oh, but you've read a comic that may have a hint in
nope.
there.
No. There's nothing in the comics that hints at that. That's purely out of my own imagination.
Purely Tom. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's interesting.
Hey, Megazeus Thor sent a link to the Geek and Sundry episode. It's also a Nerdist episode. It's kind of they're all part of the same company now. Of D and Diesel, wherein for 30 minutes you can watch Vin Diesel play D&D with stars from the Nerdist and Geek and Sundry, DM'd by Matt Mercer, host of Critical Role.
Oh, that's awesome. I saw a chunk of that, and our good friend Liam O'Brien is in that group. He rolls with Critical Role, of course. And
he rolls with Critical Role. I don't think he's in this episode of Vin Diesel.
He is not. No, he's not. In fact, it's unfortunate the reason he wasn't there. But yeah, I watched some of that footage, and he seems like a really fun guy to hang around with, that Vin Diesel, to me. Do you guys like Vin Diesel?
Yeah, I loved him in Pitch Black, and I know a lot of people give that movie a lot of crap, but I love it.
I like the second one better. I don't know what's wrong with me. I know that's not the way we're supposed to think about the world, that the second one's garbage and that first one's great, but I'm reversed and I don't know why.
I am a terrible person. I have never seen a Fast and Furious movie.
I've seen two.
Okay.
So don't feel bad. There's seven.
I'll get around to them sometime.
Daryl, how are you? Where are you at on it? He probably lost you when he was in daddy daycare or whatever that was, where he was like a tooth fairy or something. Well, I don't know what happened. He was in some terrible movie.
I haven't
seen
many of those movies.
Yeah. But he's cool. I mean, we all like Iron Giant here, right? He was the voice of the Iron Giant. And
yes.
Why not explore his nerdy ways on an episode of people playing D&D live? It's fantastic.
It's funny looking at the YouTube comments. It all depends on where your assumption was about Vin Diesel, what people say. Mm-hmm. Some people are like, wow, Vin Diesel played a pretty good game of D&D. This was really fun. And other people are like, I like how he was like totally unsure and out of his depth amongst everybody else. And to me, watching it, I'm like, he seems to be having a good time like any other person would when they're playing D&D, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, plus I don't know about you guys, but the least fun D&D I've ever watched are people who are hardcore, dyed-in-the-wool, think they've got it all figured out D&D players. What I want is the fun of, oh, crap, what does that even mean? How do I roll that? Or what is it? If I've got 2 points to that, does that even mean I can get out of this room? Like, I want that kind of thing. I want their personalities, and that's more about what he did. So they can screw off. He plays World of Warcraft, too. That's important to note.
All right, that's enough fun about TV and movies. Star Fury Zeta and a bunch of you on the subreddit don't think this geek pop culture show we do here talks enough about the pharmaceutical industry, so let's fix that.
Oh, man.
Turing Pharmaceuticals was the sole source of a drug called Daraprim, used to treat patients with compromised immune systems, usually as a result of diseases like AIDS or cancer. And Daraprim also fights parasitic diseases like malaria and toxoplasmosis. So a lot of people took it ill when last month Turing raised the price of Daraprim from $13.50 a pill, which ain't cheap, to $750 a pill. So the news in this Ars Technica article is that Imprimis Pharmaceuticals has announced an alternative to Daraprim using the same active ingredient for 99 cents a pill.
Yeah, if that whole thing doesn't just illustrate the problem with biotech generally, and I don't want to just...
Does it illustrate the active free market at work?
Well, see, that's a good point, because it, in a way, it did self-correct. My problem with it is the completely unethical period of time that existed when that thing was hiked, and there are potentially patients who suffered from either not getting it or suffered financially from having to pay ridiculous amounts of money for a single pill or whatever. So while I'm not happy about that, I am happy to see that, like you said, the free market kind of corrected itself and somebody came in and said, all right, we're not going to be buttholes about it. These are only a dollar a pill. Also, for the record, I still think that's too much for a pill. But anyway, what do you guys think? Daryl, come on, lay it on me. You always get mad about these things on TMS. I know you're pissed.
Yeah, it's stupid to, I mean, it's almost, well, in some cases, it's probably murder to raise it so high that people can't afford it that need it.
Yeah. I mean, $750 a pill. Think of all the, I don't know, what else could you buy with that money? You could pay your rent and your other medical bills and a million other things.
Yeah.
That kind of money. That just seems broken to me.
Well, very broken. Insurance is supposed to cover it, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
But the time that it would take for insurance to look at the situation, decide if they're going to cover it and everything, people could actually suffer from this. And the guy, whatever his name, I don't even want to say his name, but he thought that he was doing the right thing. And I thought, well, on what planet are you from? Like, people desperately need this stuff and you're keeping it from them. So how is this a good thing?
Yeah. Bio Money 4 is this planet. That's where he's
like
from.
The next day, didn't he say he was going to revert back to the old price?
Well, he took a lot
of
heat.
Now he's got price competition of 99 cents. No shit. He's going to reverse.
So now the amount of money that he paid for it is just worthless.
Yeah. I guess so. Well, not really. I mean, yes, in effect, that's true. I mean, you could argue that if he hadn't have done what he did, that this other company wouldn't have countered with this.
Right.
So in some ways, we owe him a debt of gratitude because now it's lower than it's ever been. But not really. I mean, but that, I guess that's how the system works. Maybe Tom makes a good point. The history's a rising road.
Devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Speaking of devil's advocate, Star Fury Zeta isn't, but he let us know that the Federal Communications Commission has published a spreadsheet in CSV format containing numbers belonging to alleged robocallers and telemarketers in the hopes of making it easier for third parties to build do not call functions into their products. The numbers are collected from an informal customer complaint database. And no, the FCC says it does not verify all the facts in the complaints. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
But it will update the spreadsheet with new numbers every week. So
wait, they just keep
here's our pair of old man complaint stories. Pills are too expensive and I get too many telemarketers.
Are they just maintaining a Google Doc and sharing it out? Like, I don't understand. This seems so basic.
Not a Google Doc. It's a spreadsheet, a CSV spreadsheet that you clicked on and download. And the idea is that you can then, CSV is a good portable format.
Sure.
So then you can build it into your products.
I guess I understand. So people like you'd get, I don't know, let's say a Chinese phone manufacturer might want this because they could build it right into their system to have an automatic block list in the address book.
I don't know why it had to be Chinese, but sure.
I don't know either.
Anybody building a service that promises to block telemarketer calls could take advantage.
I have great faith in the Chinese market for fine telephone manufacturing. That's all.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't imagine it built into the phone, but I guess it could be, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually is a website that you can go to where people report numbers that they get, and I guess they find out who's calling. So mm-hmm. if somebody keeps bugging you, you can look up the number and see what they are. But I don't remember what that website is.
Well, there's a few of them.
I would think that if you had the whole data, like all of this data, and you were trying to build some sort of blocking mechanism or a way to let customers do this, that you would probably weigh the data depending on what got the most complaints, because it'd be too easy to just slip a fake one in there and say, I don't know, the Maytag repairman up the street calls me every 5 minutes, which it may not be true. And like, I worry about that a little bit because it doesn't sound like this is very vetted from the way the article reads.
But this is raw data.
Yeah.
So, and the FCC is not promising it isn't, But I know some people might use it. There's some roll your own telemarketer blocking solutions, software based for VoIP users, like people who use Ooma and Vonage and stuff. And you could easily have it import numbers from a CSV into some system like that, in which case then it could be fun to add, you know, your grandma's number to it and whatever.
Daryl, maybe this is a step toward getting rid of those phone books you love so much that come to your house.
Oh, yes. And we just got one the other day, too.
Yeah, we did, too.
At least they're getting thinner.
Yeah, they're smaller. I guess that is the long tail on that they'll just eventually be a pamphlet and then that's the end of it. I don't even know why it still happens. I really don't get it.
Yeah, I'd like to know who really needs those.
Is this a flyer? Oh, no, it's the phone book.
Is it some like socioeconomic thing where there's a certain portion of the country that they're never going to have internet access, or at least they don't have it now and the infrastructure sucks or something? And
I don't know if it's so. There's definitely a number of people who use the phone book still, apparently. Yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense for them to print it. I mean, they get advertisers to pay them to print ads in the phone book, which is why we get phone books. So the advertisers must be getting a return on that. And I imagine there are even people with the internet who still like the old ways and look it up in the yellow pages. I don't know.
My mom, she'd do it.
And my mom too. Yeah. My mom and your mom should get together and go bowling.
Dude, totally. She's out in New Jersey all the time. Next time we'll hook them up.
If they're going bowling, I want to go too.
Okay.
My mom is the kind of person who asks me, do you have Google on your computer?
No, Mom, I have Bing. Tell her that.
Not at the moment. Hey, Captain Kip presents the news that YouTube, for which my wife works, announced a commercial-free tier called YouTube Red. Great name, guys. For $9.99 a month, all ads disappear when you're logged in, and videos can be saved to play offline. Subscribers also get access to YouTube Originals when they launch in 2016 from YouTube stars like PewDiePie and the Fine Brothers. And subscribers to Google Music and YouTube Music Key will get YouTube Red subscriptions automatically, and vice versa. So if you're a YouTube Red subscriber, you'll get all the Google Music and YouTube Music Key stuff. Dedicated music apps supposed to be released soon and offer subscribers the ability to play music in the background, even from YouTube videos. Service launches in the U.S. October 28th and is intended to come to other markets eventually.
So I just go to redtube.com, right?
That's right. Hey, wait, what? Tube? Don't do that.
Oh, that's not it?
Don't go there.
Oh,
well,
not
unless you want to go.
Okay,
there.
Not but redtube.com.
Don't go to redtube.com unless you want porn.
Okay, great.
Scott's trying to trick you.
Oh, is that what I'm doing? It's interesting. I'm actually kind of very interested in this. I want to see the players first. I'm interested in the mobile
YouTube Red or RedTube.
I'm now I've forgotten which one's which. Which one has
YouTube Red is the one that doesn't mostly have naked people.
Okay, good. That's the one I'm interested in because the music side of it is interesting to me. In that I can now get this as well. The no ads is interesting to me. You know, them getting into this business and finally saying, okay, YouTube has a place among the Netflixes and the freaking, what? What are you laughing at?
I just went to RedTube because I didn't believe that.
Don't go to RedTube,
really,
dude. Don't go to RedTube.
I said very specifically, Daryl.
That's funny, dude.
Oh, my God. You might want to take that out of your browser before you...
Yeah, hurry up and kill your history, because, man...
Do you still see anything but pop-ups still? Yeah. Or?
Oh, I just got rid of that immediately.
No, you're done now. You got to wipe your machine.
That's hilarious.
It's over.
Nice job.
It's a Mac. Maybe it's more safe.
Would you guys pay for this? You guys want this service? What do you want?
Yeah, no. Open your hard drive, scrub the platters, you're done.
All right, yeah.
Do I want the service? I don't go to YouTube very often. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to sound like get off my lawn because it's going to start sounding like Grumpy Cast, but I don't go to YouTube for anything more than what people tell me is on there. Mm-hmm. Eric, my co-host on Warcast, he was the one who told me who PewDiePie was. Like, I don't follow these people. It's outside my sphere of influence. Mm. So the only gamer that I know that I've actually actively gone to, what's his name, Boogie?
Oh, I don't know.
That's just it. It's like
Mark. I know Markiplier, and I know some angry Irish guy whose name eludes me, and PewDiePie. I've seen all those guys do their thing, but that's about it.
Not seen PewDiePie. I don't know very many people on YouTube. My daughter, my youngest, as a matter of fact, she is obsessed with people on YouTube. I'm like, how do you find these people? I just don't know.
No, it is there's no small That is not a small thing. Daryl, you've got kids in that age range. I do. YouTube is a big whoop, and it is their entertainment hub. And, you know, Nick watches a daily show on there that's only on YouTube. He watches the Yogscast play Minecraft. He watches all this other stuff as if it was his TV. And it kind of is for them. So I think this is really smart of them to get into this business. Whether or not it will apply to me and you, I think that depends on the players. It depends on the devices I can do this on, like all that other stuff. You know, if they can make that interesting, great. But the price is right, so we'll see.
It is, but I want to ask everybody here, does anybody here, I know Eileen works for YouTube, but is there some, are we out of that age range that YouTube is trying to go for? Because I don't really see a lot of things that are popular that are for people like us that are like over 40.
Well, okay, yes, I can speak with some bit of adopted experience from my wife. The big stars on YouTube do appeal to a younger demographic. So when you look at that YouTube Originals list and you see the list of stuff, people over 40 are not going to know any of those names. And that's not who that's meant for. That's meant for the vast majority of YouTube's audience who are into the Fine Brothers and Grace Helbig and all of that that world. And that's fine. I think what YouTube was smart doing is saying, great, if you're not impressed by those people, maybe you're one of the demographic that is a little older that watches a lot of other things on YouTube, especially how to, DIY, maybe food. There's all kinds of other things on YouTube besides the YouTube stars, the YouTube creators that get tons of streams. And we had a guy write into DTNS saying, hey, I'm 30, I'm in my 30s, and I watch a lot of how-to stuff on YouTube. And so getting rid of commercials before that would be great. That'd be totally worth it. And bonus, I get music as well. That's fantastic. So, and I think rolling music in there makes sense for them too, because then it's another thing for you to go, well, I don't really care about PewDiePie, but yeah, I do watch a few YouTube videos, and I'd love to have a music service all bundled together for $10. But if you're a guy who's like, I never go to YouTube, then this definitely isn't for you any more than removing ads from any product you don't use is not going to matter.
True. You. If you like their music selection, though, you might say $10 is a pretty good entry price compared to Spotify and Apple Music and everybody else. So, I mean, I feel like they're doing a good job of trying to get to as many demographics as they can. But I agree with Tom that it's just a different world, and it's fine. I mean, I go there for fail videos. I don't miss a post on failarmy.com or failarmy on YouTube. And that's one particular thing I go there for. But this, if all I was going to get was more fail videos, I don't know if it's worth it to me. No commercials.
I mean, movie trailers?
Nice.
Every movie trailer I watch seems to be on YouTube.
Yeah, all the video game stuff I watch is on YouTube. I want to see new trailers from Blizzard. Where are those hosted? YouTube? Like, I think we use YouTube more than we're admitting. We're just not treating it like the
way. If I want to see Brian Brushwood dance on Dance On and vote for him to win, I have to go to YouTube.
You have to. There's no choice. There's no other way around it. If you want to watch Scam School, you got to watch him on YouTube. Yeah. If you want to do anything, here's what I'm saying, I guess. We use YouTube more than we think we do, and I think my mom uses YouTube more than she would probably think she does. It's the ubiquitous place. It's where everybody goes. If it's constant PewDiePie all day, or if it's some older guy who's like, no, wait a minute, I can't get the software to work. I need to find some tutorials. That is what that place has become. You just have to decide whether $9 a month is enough to, you know, drive you to, I guess, spend money on them. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Yeah. We use for This Week in Trek, we get our intermission music from there a lot of the time.
Yeah, they do good. Well, they have to, but they've been motivated to give people good royalty free stuff so that they aren't getting dinged on their streams and stuff from using music that
don't get dinged on your streams.
Yeah, don't get dinged on your streams. The string ding is what they call it. All right. There's the news. Now it's this.
America scores and wins.
Oh, that music only needs one thing and one thing only. It's time for the pop quiz. You guys are asked questions in areas of your expertise. You answer those questions in the affirmative or negative. If you get one right, if you get one wrong, Tom keeps score the whole time. You compete against each other, and it's all for good fun. This week, we're starting with Daryl. Daryl, are you ready for your questions?
I thought I was off the hook on for Fridays, but not this Friday.
Doesn't this sound familiar, though? Like, we do this every day.
Just different music.
Yeah. Every day.
And your topic is pharmaceuticals.
Every freaking day. I'm trying to find the pop quiz because he moved this. Okay, there it is, Daryl Skills. All right, Daryl, here's your first question in the category of MASH trivia.
Oh, nice.
Because
he
just finished the entire run of MASH on Netflix, enjoyed himself immensely. Now we're going to see how much he remembers. So here you go. First question. What is the name of Winchester's sister? Remember when we found out she stutters? She had that episode of tape.
Coming out firing.
I just watched that, too.
Yeah, it's a late season one or a late late series one.
Yeah, 11th season.
Yeah.
I'm trying to appeal to the gavel here. So 11th season.
All hail the gavel.
I don't remember her name. I'm horrible with names.
Well,
if it was in a list of four, I'd get it.
You'd get it.
Sure.
Well, guess. Give us a guess, and then I'll tell you.
Sissy Spacek.
You are so wrong. It is Honoria is her name.
Oh, what a stupid
name.
Well,
no, he actually gets 2 points because he was right about not remembering and that he probably would be able to pick it out of a multiple choice list.
All right. You are playing to the gavel for sure. Here's the next question.
That's a Star Trek name.
It is. What city is Frank Burns from? I knew this one.
Crap. Indiana.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to give you do you know the city? Because I'll tell you, that's correct about the state. Do you know the city?
Well, Indianapolis, I guess.
It is Fort Wayne, but Tom, I'll let you decide.
It's a half point. Half point for Indiana. Right. Yeah.
Well,
if it had been Indianapolis, he would have got 3/4 of a point for having the word be in the title of the state.
Nice. All right. Where did Honeycutt go to medical school?
Honeycutt went to medical school. Honeycutt. BJ. He went to a big school. The name, I don't know. It started with a D, I guess.
Stanford is the correct word.
Oh, no, that's wrong.
That definitely
ends with a D, so you get a tenth of a point.
All right, what actor was the first one cast for the show? So there's one actor cast for the show before anybody else.
Ooh, it's between two of them, because one of them is the only one to be in the original movie, which was Gary Berkoff. I don't know if he was the first one cast for the TV series.
Oh, interesting. So do you think it's him or somebody else?
Sure. Well, I don't know if I'm being tricked or not here. So Mike made these.
Mike made these, I didn't make them, yeah.
Now that might make a difference.
Answer is PewDiePie.
PewDiePie!
I'll go ahead. I'll say Gary Berghoff because Iceworm made this question.
You are correct. It is Gary Berghoff. Well done. And he is also the only actor to carry over from the film. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. What actor was approached to reprise his role as Duke Forrest but turned it down? So that's a character from the movie, Duke Forrest.
Oh, gosh.
Famous actor.
Yeah, famous actor. I'll give you a hint. Oh, no, that'll give it away. Never mind.
Oh, I probably wouldn't.
All right, Top Gun.
See? It probably wouldn't.
Not Tom Cruise.
A river runs through it.
See, I'm bad at this stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I guess
he's
you're right.
He's great on there. Great movie. I like all the Redford movies, directed movies.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy with the...
Is Daryl still answering?
Yeah, he is. He's
the guy with the big eyebrows.
All right. Incorrect. It is Tom Skerritt, although I guess he has big eyebrows. I don't know.
Oh, okay. He was in that.
He did not think the TV show would be successful, and
he changed
his mind. Yeah.
Wait,
what? It was one of the most successful TV shows ever. What size dress does Klinger wear? This was said multiple times during the series when he was wearing dresses.
Size men.
Incorrect. It was size 14. You're close.
Oh,
poetically
close.
True, though. You get 0.3 of a point.
Poetically true.
Yeah.
So many things in my life are poetically true. All right. Second to last question. What were the names of Trapper John's daughters?
These are really hard.
They are hard. I told them not to go easy.
Man, I really need multiple choice for these.
Well, there's two. If that helps.
Whose daughters?
John McIntyre, Trapper's.
Trapper John, M.D.
Yep.
Had another named M and another named D.
Different actor, which is unfortunate.
No, different actor. Same character.
Same character, though, right? Yeah.
So how many are there?
There are two.
Could you use it in a sentence?
Yes, Trapper John's daughters had these names.
Let's see. They probably were taken from something else.
Probably.
So I'm going to guess they came from the Three Stooges, and I'm going to say Mary and Joanne.
Incorrect. Becky and Kathy would be the proper answer.
Well, I got also, it. There's a Y on the end of one.
You lose a half point for delay of game.
We also would have accepted Fine and Howard.
Yeah. Very nice. All right, final question. The chicken was a what?
That's not a question.
That's on here.
It's a spoiler.
The chicken was a what is the question.
I guess I get to... He felt sorry for me. He knew I'd do badly, so the chicken was... Oh, but Iceworm came up with these. Maybe the chicken was actually a rooster.
Well, there was no... Well, no, wait. The baby was a what? Not the chicken was a what?
The chicken was a baby.
No.
And the baby was a chicken.
Yeah, the baby... Okay, you got it right. You totally got it right.
I was just going to go with a straight point on that one. I don't even know.
I don't even know what to do with it. That was insane. Okay, nice job. We'll hold your score for now because it's Mike's... Or it's... yeah, Mike's turn. Mike, you ready?
All right, what is it?
That's all I know.
Your category, because we've been talking about it, and I know you're a big fan of it, and we got a big movie coming up, it is Star Wars trivia.
Oh, wow.
I will warn you, it is not easy Star Wars trivia, so there you go.
Canon or legend?
Yeah, because if it's from books or something, then I'm just going to be like, nope.
I think it's canon. I'm looking over this just to make sure. Yeah, this is all movies and canon, okay?
All right.
So here you go. Star Wars trivia. What is the name of Vader's TIE Fighter squadron in the Battle of Yavin?
Damn. Comes up firing again.
Named?
What? Say it again.
Is that named?
It's named. I think you said, is it Bane? And I was going to say,
your punishment will be more severe. Take back your city.
That star is rising.
That's no moon.
I Vader's Raiders.
Oh, that would be the... Tom, you got to give him points for that. But it's incorrect. It's Black Squadron.
That's what I was going to say, but that was never named in the movie.
I think you definitely get a point for
Vader's
poetically
Raiders.
True.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. What religious group would often remove the brains of their members and install them in spider-like droids?
What?
Yeah.
This is not canon.
This is canon, and I'll give you a hint. They were seen all over the place in Jabba's palace.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but religious? I don't know about that.
Don't know that one? Okay, I'm going to give you one of these then. It's the Boomar Order. I don't know how to say it. B'OMARR.
If it wasn't in the script, then I don't know it.
Well, good. Well, then some of these are going to be even more fun. Here's one. What is the name of the Star Destroyer that captures the Tantive IV in the opening to New Hope?
Devastator.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Well done.
Well, we haven't hit that ding in a while.
Two-tenths of a point speed bonus.
Yeah, that was great. By the way, that was his flagship until he got the Executor, which was his Super Star Destroyer. Next question. Han Solo had planned to stay with the Rebels, but he tells Leia, a bounty hunter, on what planet changed his mind?
Oh, I'm visualizing, hold on.
That bounty hunter I ran into on...
Ord Mantell.
Oh, you got it. Jeez Louise. I'm impressed. Daryl, eat your hat here.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, what Echo call signs does Luke and Han use in the beginning of Empire Strikes Back?
Echo 3 to Echo 7.
Jeez, he's killing it now.
He actually gets 10 points for that.
Oh, my Lord. I'm blown away by that. All right, what spy in Mos Eisley informs the stormtroopers of the location of the Millennium Falcon and the droids?
That's the guy with the snout, but he didn't have an... I don't know what his name... You know, they assign these goofy names because they have to sell figures.
Yeah, they do.
So I don't... I have the Star Wars silly trading card app, and I know the guy has a name, but I just don't know what it is.
He's going, hammer. Remember that guy?
The guy with the nose.
Yeah, that's the guy, but the answer is Garadan. Garadan.
You lose 8 points for mocking the premise of the question.
Wow. That 10 points was easy come, easy go.
It was, wasn't it?
Second from the last question, what character claims to have the death sentence on 12 systems?
Oh, his name, I know his name is like Dr. something. He's one of another one of those characters they assigned a name.
John. Trapper John. Yeah. I'll give you a hint that you are correct. He is known as Dr. something.
Dr. something. I know that they threw his name, but I don't know what his last name is.
Well, you're so close, but no cigar. It is Cornelius Evanson, or he is known in some lore as Dr. Evanson.
Okay. So well, you get a quarter point then. for the doc, for knowing the doctor.
I have the death sentence in 12 sisters.
What he needed was a nose doctor.
You'll be dead.
Yeah, he needs to be.
Hey, or I will from the smoking.
A nose doctor is what he needed to be. My gosh. Yeah, anyway, right. Final question. What is the name of the Twi'lek dancer who gets eaten by the Rancor?
Oh, I sort of know this. Doesn't her name end in L-O-O or something?
You're so close.
Yeah, it's
Babaloo.
And again, she had a name. She was given a name in Jedi, even though it's not in the script. Something Lou.
It's definitely not Babaloo.
Babaloo.
Here, let me hit the thing here. It is an Oola.
Oola.
So it's got an N with an umlaut over it and then O-O-L-A.
Yeah, tenth of a point.
Yeah, that was pretty. Yeah, you seem to have some good knowledge on that. All right, there's your questions. Tom, add them up. How'd they do?
It's pretty close. Daryl Skeels with 4.4 and Michael Gaines with 5.55.
Wow. Close. Wow. That 10-point thing almost murdered you, man. Way to come back from that. Nice job. Well done, guys. Time for this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Oh, looky here. Daryl has a forecast. That's where we try to predict the future in geek and technology and other stuff. What's the world going to be like in the not-too-distant future? Daryl, you wrote one in here. Tell us what you think about DNA scanning.
Well, I think that in the not-too-distant future, doctors will be able to scan you with a little thing like you have at the grocery store, and it will tell you everything about your whole life.
Mm. And these don't exist yet, right?
No.
We talked about this earlier back and forth, but I don't think anything, unless you submit to drawing blood or something, or peeing on a stick, or, you know.
Are you asking if there's a scanner that can scan your DNA and tell you everything about your life?
Well, maybe not about your life, but one that could. Is there anything where I can walk through like an NSA high security building and have it go beep boop and have it say, okay, he matches?
No, you have to remove the DNA and like mash it up, and it takes a while.
Okay, so yes, they don't exist. So is it just, but Daryl, you're not really even talking about so much, it doesn't have to be DNA necessarily. Couldn't it just be, I don't know, brainwaves or some other thing it could pick up on?
Well, it will be DNA because who you are is in your DNA, and your brainwaves are probably determined by your DNA. I don't think we know all this for sure yet.
What about epigenetics, Daryl?
What about the whole nature versus nurture thing? I mean,
yeah, I thought about that, but I think your nurturing and the results of that are, I think it all comes from your DNA.
So
I think you are a programmed computer. I mean, no. You are a computer. You run your program. Your program is your program.
But what if I'm going to use your analogy. I come to, I'm expelled from my mother's womb. And in there, I had been pre-programmed to be a certain thing, right? I get out of there. Thank goodness, right? I'm out of there finally. And then my mom starts, quote unquote, hacking the software by saying, oh no, you don't like candy. You only like vegetables or whatever. Isn't that?
Don't twins do exactly the same thing all the time?
See, there you go. There's another good one.
My wife is a twin, and she and her sister are completely different.
Yeah. Well, they look a lot alike, right?
They look a lot alike. Well, not so much anymore, but like years ago, they look very, very much alike. But now,
so they have diverged.
They have diverged. You know, one's got longer hair and such. But at the same time, it's like, I don't think there's a podcaster genome in our DNA. So I'm not buying this.
Well, that's an interesting point. But Daryl, do you mean like the overall thing? Like you're prone to happiness and not sad. Or, you know what I mean? Like you're talking about the bigger picture.
Things like you would be more likely to be a programmer of this kind, or more likely to be a basketball player. And this thing would also be able to read your DNA and show a picture of you because you come from your DNA. And so even before you were born, you could take a scan and it would show you what you look like as an old man.
So we're basically talking about
the problem is the more we learn about genetics, the more we're finding out that DNA determines much less about an organism than we thought.
Mm. Yeah.
And that a lot has to do with not just nurture, but actually environmental factors, epigenetic factors, things in the mitochondria. So as stated, I can't get behind you, Daryl, but if you broaden it to say, we'll be able to scan your genetic makeup, including your epigenetic factors and including the likely environmental factors that you're going to deal with because you live in a certain area, then maybe, yeah, maybe you start to be able to say like, well, you know, given your history and your makeup and where you are, it's pretty likely that you're going to end up being like this.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah. let's say it this way. If you're born genetically with, you know, large bone structure, musculature that, you know, develops faster or something, whatever, you tend to be more athletic, let's say.
Given the fact that we inserted Michael Jordan's genes into you at birth because you were a designer baby.
Okay, let's say that that happened. Sure. they were trying to make me into a basketball player. Now, let's say I'm born and then in 18 years, which is about the time I would start being considered by colleges to leave high school and go play for them and then go on to the NBA. Let's say a major catastrophe happens, the world's biggest hurricane hovers over the world and just destroys everything, but I survive, and a bunch of other survivors survive, but there's no basketball anymore. We're done. Well, now, the thing I was quote-unquote pre-programmed for doesn't exist. Instead, I'm out lifting logs and helping build a fort because the zombies are coming, and so I may be still using my strength and those tendencies from that core DNA print, but I'm not the basketball player I was programmed to be. You know what I mean? Yeah,
you would have to interpret all that stuff.
Right.
And take into account what's going on in the world.
Yeah, you're not talking about fate. You're just talking about...
Yeah. like a...
Like some guy can use a brand new Mac Pro, one of those cylinder awesome computers. They can walk home, pay $5,000 for that thing. They can take it home and they can use it to look at porn all day. And somebody else can take it home and crunch video all day and put it up on YouTube. Very different uses, but that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, so one person is making things for YouTube Red, and the other one is just watching RedTube.
Yeah. Yes, I think that is absolutely it. That's interesting. I don't know. I think that the idea that we're going to get scanned soon and everyone will know everything about us by that scan, I think that is not far off. What that involves or what they see or how they get it, I don't know. But
I think we're going to be surprised at how much we can't tell. Hmm. But I do think Daryl's right that we'll be able to tell a whole lot more and be able to give better guidance to people to say like, hey, these are some things you should try. These are some skills you should pick up. We think you'll enjoy, like, and not just from DNA, but from all kinds of factors that we can take into account. I think there's definitely something to this.
Do you think that we will, are you going to embrace our Gattaca-like future, or would you rebel against it, Daryl?
Well, I don't think it'll be determinative. That's the thing we're finding out, is that it's much harder to determine what someone is going to be like, or even just like what kind of diseases they're going to have, or what kind of, you know, very basic factors that they express, because DNA isn't as deterministic as we thought when it was first revealed back in the 50s.
And it doesn't account for outliers like, you know, a guy who's born, both parents die young of lung cancer and never smoked, but this guy smokes for 95 years and dies in his sleep of natural causes.
Well, and they're finding that like people with identical strands of DNA have entirely different kinds of diseases. Hmm. Have entirely different expressions of those same strands of DNA for various reasons. So I think it's not down to just that, but I think we can help guide people. The thing I really want is something that scans me and says, you should eat this right now because these are the factors in your nutrition that need to be balanced. And you're likely to think it tastes good because we scanned your brain.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, you're short on iron, you need some protein or whatever. I like that. That's not bad.
It'll be good for that and lots of other stuff.
So for more information, redtube.com, everybody.
Stop saying
that. Oh,
wait, is
that not? I'm confused
somebody
it again.
Like Daryl's going to go.
Oh, I've confused it again. I apologize. If any kids listen, do not go there, okay?
3 days from now, you're going to have
too late.
It says, this is what happens when I talk about RedTube.
I should have known. All right, we got an email from a listener I want to share real quick. It was actually from last week, but we ran out of time, so I want to use it this week. It's very interesting timing because I just finished the first season of the show they're talking about. But it says this. Hi, my name is Templeton, which is great. It says, this is not my real name. Anywho, was wondering if you guys had a take on the new Fargo show compared to the movie Fargo. I was going to watch it, and I want to hear from people I trust on how they feel about it. Keep the keeping on, Templeton. Well, Templeton, if that is, in fact, not your real name.
Maybe it is. That's the trick.
I just finished season one of Fargo from last year, and I'm ready to dig into to the early bits of two, which just started a couple
episodes. Yeah, just two episodes into season two, and I've watched all of it.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Scott, but I feel like it really preserves the atmosphere of the movie.
Yeah.
But without really replicating the movie.
I would 100% agree, and it's perhaps my favorite takeaway from it, is that they somehow figured out a way to not make this feel like a TV version of something bigger. Where other shows fail, like arguably you could say that the new Minority Report show does not hold a candle to the inspiration. There have been Nine to Five is another great example, although one that hardly anyone remembered happened. But yes, I do remember that. Like there are lots of examples of that where it doesn't work. There are a few where it does. You know, MASH was a good example. I think that was maybe timing and place and era that made that work better than it made.
Yeah, MASH is an example of the opposite, where they basically just tried to replicate the movie, but they grew it into their own tempo and their own pace.
Very much
so. I tried to watch that movie. The MASH movie from 1970. It was boring and terrible.
I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
I like it. I like it. I like it too.
I literally dozens of times.
But I don't like it like I like. I mean, I don't like it for the same reasons I like the show.
Yeah,
I like.
No,
it
and
for
I liked
totally
the show first, which is why I went to watch the movie, and I like the movie for different reasons.
Yeah, same here. So
I did the same thing with The Odd Couple.
Good one.
I grew up with the TV show, and then I watched the movie. The movie wasn't just. It wasn't as snappy as the TV show was, but it was still good.
Just different, right? So my point is that Fargo somehow figured that out, though. It's like it just continued on. It's almost like we went and saw two episodes of a Fargo TV show in 1996. We just didn't know it, and now the series continues on. Mm-hmm. I don't mean the same characters or picking up right where it was or any of that, but the tone, the way everything is treated, the quirk. Like, that thing is Coen Brothers as hell and back. It's fantastic. I loved every second of it, and I would not hesitate to recommend it to just about anyone. Now, if you did not like the movie, though, I don't think they're going to... Tom, I don't think they like the show if they don't like the movie. Because it is... I mean, it's cut from the same cloth, man.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little less graphic in its violence, if that's your objection. Maybe that's enough to make it better. But if you just don't like the overall Coen Brothers sense... And the Coen brothers are executive producers on the TV show, but they're not the producers that are working directly on it.
Right.
But they definitely kept that Coen brothers sensibility.
Yeah, and their blessing is all over it, and it's great.
Ugh, it reeks with their blessing.
Really good. And I keep hearing the new one's great, too. And I'm the only thing I've seen is, for some reason, Bruce Campbell is on a election poster in the background a lot in this 1978 set version of Fargo, and I want to know why Bruce Campbell is in there. So very excited to get into season two and see what that's all about. If you want to send your own emails in, you can. currentgeek@gmail.com. Thank you, Templeton, and everybody who sends those in. And that is going to do it for the show. Oh, my goodness. You guys were great. Thank you for being guests again on the show.
Thanks for having us.
You're in the rotation now. Mike, tell us where people can find more of you on the internet.
You can find more of me at StarMike on Twitter. Warcast is dead. For those of you that don't know, I've been trying to get this new show up and running, but real life has gotten in the way. So I'm still working on that. It's not dead. So in the meantime, This Week in Trek that I do with Daryl every Tuesday at 2:30 Eastern and 11:30 a.m. Pacific. And I do the Hooniverse and a bunch of other little things. So
very nice. Busy man.
Yeah.
StarMike on Twitter. Follow him there. Daryl, where can people find you?
I can be found at The Trek Nerd on Twitter and at GrumpyCast, and you can listen to that podcast as well.
Oh, good. Well, I think I might. I actually already do. So there's that. Tom, anything else before we go, sir?
Citadel 32, which is covered by Scott Johnson, written by me. It's a little bit of a post-apocalyptic science fiction. You can get 20% off print versions at lulu.com if you use the code OCTFLASH30. Through October 26th.
Oct Flash 30.
Yeah, so OCT like October, Flash like flash sale, and then 30.
Yeah, that was a great movie about the trying to get Osama bin Laden.
Oct Flash 30. And the flash flood that carried him away in October.
Wow, this is some sweet alt fiction going on. Anyway, please do that. And also check us out at currentgeek.com. That's where all the stuff is. You can find us there. Call us, leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462. If you so desire, on Twitter, Ace to Tech, Scott Johnson, and Current Geek. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we return to the expanding field of copyright fair use with a review of the Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision protecting Google Books from copyright infringement liability. Late last week, a 3-judge panel in a New York federal court of appeals dismissed a lawsuit brought by an authors guild against Google, claiming that the copying and digital storage of copyrighted books and other works in the Google Books program was copyright infringement. Just like the lower courts, the appeals court determined that Google Books is fair use under copyright law. Fair use is a 4-factor balancing test, which is a very gray area, and always fact-based. The judges ruled that Google's unauthorized digitizing and copying of the copyrighted works has a purpose that was highly transformative, specifically because it makes a whole new resource for electronic access and analysis of data and information contained in this library of works. Furthermore, under another fair use factor, the public display of text provided to the public from the works when searched in the Google Books is only a small amount, and these limited snippets are deemed to be an insignificant amount of the work. Additionally, another factor is effect on the market for the original work, and Google Books is not an actual market substitute for the protected aspects of the original works. That means that 3 of the 4 fair use factors favored Google rather than the Authors Guild. The final factor is the nature of the works, and while that factor almost certainly favors the authors, the balance of the equities favored Google because even though Google is a commercial entity with some profit motivation, this Google Books tool provides a new, useful public service that may actually increase the market for the original copyrighted works. So Google avoids what would be a devastating loss, as minimum damages for copyright infringement is $750 per work. Multiply that by the millions of works in the Google Books catalog, and that becomes billions of dollars. Google Books will remain active, subject to a final appeal to the Supreme Court, which the Authors Guild plans to petition for. Even though this case has origins that date back about a decade, the law on fair use has certainly shifted in that time period to favor Google. When this increase in the scope of fair use leads to truly useful research tools and new options like Google Books, it's easy to defend those organizations fighting for the dramatic fair use expansion. But one has to wonder if this trend risks going way too far and undermining the legitimacy and value of copyrights across the board. Something to watch as these major decisions continue. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy, and check out my other podcast, Talking 10.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.